You're ready, Mr. Barrett?
I am, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you. And may it please the court, I would respectfully request to be permitted 5 minutes rebuttal at the end of appellee's argument.
Okay. So you must have both gotten the memo, because in the prior argument, they asked for 5 minutes. And 5 minutes is a little bit unusual. Usually it's two or three, it's fine. But I'm wondering if a memo went out that we missed saying on Thursdays, you need to reserve 5 minutes of rebuttal.
The reason for my request, Your Honor, is because there are some issues that I anticipate appellee raising that may take me a little bit more time.
Okay.
Thank you. And may it please the court, my name is Graham Baird, and I represent Lachelle Watson in a case that she brings before this court against Drexel University. We are requesting that this honorable court overturn the finding of the entry of summary judgment on Ms. Watson's Americans with Disabilities Act claims and Family and Medical Leave Act claims.
Mr. Terry Strong, did you waive the retaliation under the FMLA in your argument before Judge Rubino? I thought you had.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. And I don't think the facts would support a retaliation claim. There are also some waiver arguments raised in appellee's brief that, depending on if you'd like me to address those now, I'm happy to. My view is that we, a lot of times in these employment cases involving the FMLA and ADA, there are an intertwining of the claims. Essentially, what we are saying is
the law is intertwined. I mean,
yeah,
the law applies to one, applies to another.
Is it accurate that you haven't raised in your briefing any disability discrimination claims on appeal?
I think that that is correct, Your Honor. I don't think the facts would support a finding of an evil motive as against Ms. Watson. But in terms of her termination, the failure to engage her in the interactive process towards an ADA accommodation with regards to the fact that Drexel terminated her based on what they viewed as unexcused absences. Our claims that are preserved, to my thinking, are that those absences should have been protected under
right.
the FMLA and
so
ADA.
But it's all about FMLA, right?
I disagree, Your Honor. I think that the ADA claim is preserved in our brief in the second part of our argument in terms of the meetings from June of 2017 between Ms. Watson and Mr. Carlton essentially triggered Drexel's obligation to engage her in an interactive process towards accommodating those absences for leave.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You got to the point, which is the only accommodation that you were claiming they should have made was approve or leave. That's the only accommodation that was asked for, that's the only accommodation that was being sought, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. Don't
okay.
count those. I'm sorry,
okay.
Your Honor.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. If I understand the timeline right, she asked for and is approved initially for June 2, 2016 to August 24, 2016. There's no dispute about that. And then she's approved again without having to submit another certification for August 24 through October 17, 2016. And where we run into trouble is beginning October 18 through May 17. That's the time frame where there's first a denial because of a lack of certification, and that's where you guys start to see things not eye to eye. And you say, if I understood the position correctly, there's like you said, a failure of an inner process. They didn't give her the notice they should have. So here's my question for you with that long lead in. Assume for the sake of discussion that they blew it when they first did that. They send her a letter in December, if I'm right, or maybe it's in January of the next year. But in any event, they send her a letter that says, look, from October 18, 2016 through May 17, 2017, we're going to give you an opportunity to fix the problem with your certification. Am I correct in my understanding of the facts on that?
Somewhat, Your Honor. And the way I would address that is to say there was a letter sent to Ms. Watson from Guardian, the third-party administrator for Drexel. Right. And essentially, to my thinking, in our view, it's a little confusing as to what that initial.
What's the date of that letter? That's November 9?
There's two letters, Your Honor. There's one from January 7th, 2017, I believe. And then there's another letter as of January 11th, 2017, both from Guardian.
Yeah, February. There's a letter, let's see, on February 28, right? February 28, 2017, that provides her with the opportunity to cure the incomplete certification. And so my question for you is, even if they'd messed up on the first go round, when they come back on February 28th and say, you can still fix this, And they tell her what she needs to do to fix it, why doesn't that put the ball back in her court in a way that she had responsibility for, and that if it doesn't work, it's on her?
Because, Your Honor, I think that the communications, when taken as a whole, are confusing and confounding, and they don't live up to the standard set forth in Hansler, where you have the employer, when they find the certification to be incomplete, has to give a reasonable opportunity to the employee.
Well, it's 7 days, right? Don't the regs say, and I think we said in Hansler, you have 7 days to fix it.
I think that's right, Your Honor. But
what's the February 28 letter said, this is quoting from a chart in the district court's opinion, that it says that the it's denied the request for leave from Guardian because the CHP did not contain all of the information necessary for Guardian to make the determination about a requested leave. And then it says, because the physician had not completed the quote, and the quotes are in the opinion, amount of leave needed section of the CHP. Is that the only, and I take it that is the information that was not included by the doctor, right? That section, box C, was not checked.
I think that's right, Your Honor. And I think that the way that this worked was that Ms. Watson was confused during that whole time period because she's communicating with Guardian, her doctors, as well as Drexel. As of May, mid-May of 2017, she is summoned to a meeting. And meanwhile, she's taking FMLA leave and she's giving notice to her supervisors for this entire time period saying, my fibroids are creating an issue for me. I need to take FMLA leave and I'm leaving. And there's no written discipline. There's no, hey, hold on, Lachelle, you need to square this away with Guardian as to whether you're eligible. There's no pushback.
There's none of that. And I found this confusing. So I understand why Ms. Watson could have confused by it. But the February 28 letter helped me understand why that does not comport with what we said has to be provided in Hansler. Gave her 7 days. Doesn't say in that letter she has 7 days, but under the law, she has 7 days from February 28. Let's say from the receipt of the February 28 letter. And then she was instructed in March 13, 2017, that her request for leave for the time period from October 18 to May 31 of 2017 was denied due to incomplete certification. And I'm assuming that incomplete certification is still going back to not filling out the amount of leave needed in that section of the of the CHP, but I think it's box C. Is that right?
I think that that is correct, Your Honor. I think that's Drexel's position. And I think what
why is it wrong?
Because, Your Honor, she is receiving several different letters. The first letter that was sent by Drexel with regards to this insufficient certification says, we didn't even receive the certification, to which Ms. Watson...
I understand it's a mess. And she wasn't told in the prior notifications, as she had to have been told under Hansler and the statute and the regs. She wasn't told what she had to do to fix it until that letter is sent on February 28th. And then after that, it's unfortunate. Clearly, I mean, the conduct here is not going to win Drexel any nominations for Employer of the Year. But that's not our concern. Our concern is whether or not FMLA was complied with. And it seems to me that had the February 28th notification not specifically stated that the CHP was missing the section for amount of leave needed, then you'd be in really good shape because Hansler kicks in and Drexel basically blew it. But once that is given to her, and then you have 7 days to fix it, and I understand she's confused. I don't frankly blame her for being confused, but confusion doesn't necessarily come in under the FMLA. That's just not there. So help me understand why, after that February 28 notice was given, with notice, which I think you're saying is adequate, correct me if I'm not interpreting what you're saying accurately there. 7 days run, and then the next thing is March 13, when they advise her that her request has been denied for a prior notification due to incomplete certification. That does not reiterate why it was incomplete. And it does seem like she did everything she thought she had to do. She acted promptly when she was informed that her certification was denied. She went back to the doctor. The doctors are complaining they've never seen anything like this before. They've never had to fill out this many certifications. But they went ahead and filled out another certification anyhow. But there was something about that little box that still wasn't checked on most of the forms. And frankly, only speaking for myself, I'm very sympathetic to your client. Sympathy doesn't get you anywhere unless there's a regulation or a statute or a case that translates my sympathy into some kind of controlling precedent. And I'm struggling to find it. And seems to me, again, speaking only for myself, that February 28 notification may just pull the legs out from under you. And if I'm missing something, please let me know.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. What I would say is that I don't think that in this set of circumstances, in these facts, that it would be fair to characterize Drexel's conduct through Guardian as a reasonable opportunity for Ms. Watson to cure the deficiencies with the certification.
Because fair into it. I tell law students this all the time. It's really nice when judges think that our job is achieving a fair result. We have to achieve a legal result. Sometimes that is the same as a fair result. Sometimes it isn't. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've written decisions. I'm sure the same is true for my colleagues on this panel, where we've reached conclusions that we thought were just darn right unfair. It happens in immigration all the time, but it's what the law requires. So help me, and I understand you're on summary judgment. So maybe that makes a difference, but maybe it doesn't. She had her 7 days. Seems to me Congress has said fairness requires that the person be given 7 days to cure the notice, to address the notice. She had her 7 days. So if we take fairness in terms of what Congress apparently has defined as being fair, again, help me understand how she gets over that hurdle.
I think that the interpretation of the regulations governing the certification establishes the reasonable opportunity to cure. So just because Guardian sends her a letter saying that the certification has to have that section C box checked and a very specific discussion of exactly how much and how often she's going to be needing to leave is omitted by her doctors, it can't be looked at simply, that letter does not simply absolve Drexel of any violations, because you have to look at the entire time period and Drexel's actions during that time as providing a
reasonable opportunity. Help us with that, because that's a key point. Where is it in the law, right? They have to give her an opportunity to cure. And this clearly gives her an opportunity to cure. It points out to her what's missing. It tells her how to do it. It tells her what's got to be done. It gives her the form, and it tells her, do it right, and you've got a period of time to do it. It lays all that out for her. Now, assume for the sake of discussion, we agreed with you that the earlier stuff was bad and they blew it. Where in the law do you have something that says that if a person is prepared, if an employer is prepared to overlook all the previous defaults because she had not done what she needed to do in the previous one, she had not given them the information she was required to, and they failed to give the notice, right? But here they're saying, look, we're going to give you another chance to fix all this, and she still doesn't do it. Where in the law is there something that says that an employer who makes right its failure to know it, to provide proper notice, and also forgives the employee's previous failures, is by virtue of that earlier failure, which they are trying to fix, still liable when the employee doesn't do what the employee is supposed to do?
There is very little guidance or support that I can find within the cases that follow Hansler for that. What I would say is that the facts are create an issue, because even at these meetings that she was having with regards to the certifications in June, where she is suspended, where her employment is put on hold, Mr. Carlton through Drexel is saying, we still don't have your certification, Ms. Watson. That wasn't true. At that point, it was the purported problem with the certification was the lack of box C being checked and it being deemed insufficient. In and around May 24th,
hold on a second. When you say that wasn't true, it was true that they didn't get the full information they were entitled to ask for and that they did ask for, right? I mean, I'm with Judge McKee on this. It's not that your client's position is unsympathetic. It is sympathetic. And Drexel, to not put too fine a point on it, kicking her to the curb just before she has to have major surgery looks, frankly, terrible. It's not the sort of thing that makes people feel good about Drexel University. And now Ms. Gadeus will speak to, that Drexel did what they could, et cetera, and we understand. But it's not that you don't have a sympathetic case. You do. The question is question is whether Drexel did the things it had to do in order to exercise its rights. And its rights were to say, we're not giving you leave under this federal act unless you give us the information we're entitled to have. And they appear to have done that in the February 28th letter. Now, that's where the problem is that we're trying to get you to help us see. Is there something other going on in this case that would allow your client not to give the information and still have an FMLA claim?
Yes, because she... because she is communicating with Drexel about how to cure the deficiencies with regards to her certification. And as a matter of fact, Guardian's own people who are looking at her file send an email in or around May 24th stating, by the way, Ms. Watson's medical information in the file is supportive of the leaves for the entire period. Do you want to overturn your decision to deny the medical leave? And then no one ever answers that question. So,
well, as a legal matter, though, as just a pure legal matter, was Drexel entitled to say no? I mean, that might be the morally right thing to do, but we're entitled to rest on what the statutes and the regs provide, and she didn't do what she was supposed to do, and so we're not overturning it. I mean, they maybe never acted on it, but are they required to overturn the decision Guardian made based on the statute and regs?
I think that they are required to overturn because Guardian is making all the determinations as to eligibility and approval and denial for the FMLA leave.
And they didn't make any mistakes. I mean, Guardian did not make any mistakes. The forms that were sent in were not, quote, sufficient or complete. And in Hansler, we really addressed this kind of a situation. We're talking about when a certification is insufficient and when leave can be denied after an, quote, insufficient certification has been received. And we said, and this is at page 153 of the third opinion, that if the employer determines that a certification is either incomplete or insufficient, it may deny the requested leave on the basis of an inadequate certification, but it may only do so if it has provided the employee with 7 calendar days, unless that's not practical, given the particular circumstances of the employee, and the employee could not have done that. I'm paraphrasing there. And that end of parenthesis, to cure any such deficiency. And that's why I keep coming back to that one final last letter that was sent out that appears to do that. It points her attention to what was lacking. She then had 7 days under Hansler and under the regs. She was not entitled to any more than 7 days. Clearly Drexel, under all these circumstances, they should have given more than 7 days. They're not going to win any awards for Employer of the Month, but they're not legally obligated to do it. And that's all we can do here. It may have a claim for retaliation, it seems to me, but that's been waived. You could well have argued that the reason she was finally canned was because they were just fed up with her, all these FMLA requests, and every time they turn around, she's running to the doctor. But the retaliation claim under the FMLA is not before us. So I'm looking hard to find a path to get me to where you want us to get, and I'm stubbing my toe on that February 28 notification.
Well, what about this is the problem that I have with the reliance upon that February 2017 letter to Ms. Watson, in that Drexel, Guardian are making all of these different communications to her. They're telling her several different things. We didn't receive your certification. That wasn't true. Ms. Watson testified clearly that I watched the doctor fax that over to Guardian. During those June meetings, Mr. Carlton is telling her, we still don't have your certification. This is after Guardian has already told him that her medical on file is fully supportive of approval for that time period. So why is Drexel permitted to make all of these inaccurate communications to Ms. Watson, but that she must rigidly adhere to this arguably, and again, we think the court looked at the facts in a light favorable to Drexel, not to Ms. Watson in the entry of summary judgment.
Well, wait. Stop right there. What can you point to where the court was not looking, particularly on the key point that Judge McKee has been asking you about and I've asked you about, which is this February 28 letter? That's the letter where they say, we're giving you another chance. I mean, how did the district court fail to look at that in a light favorable to your client?
Because the district court is relying solely on one communication when Ms. Watson had been obtaining FMLA and utilizing FMLA for almost a year prior to that. And there are numerous communications that
did they ever give her a notification prior to February 28th? Here's how I thought it worked. They told her you're okay when she first asked. When she asked for an extension, they said you can have it and you don't need a new certification because it's covered by your earlier one. You're good. And then she asked for another one and they said, well, you need another certification. And she didn't do it. And they told her, you didn't do it, so we can't grant it. But they didn't give the right notice. And that was bad on them. You could, you know, like if that record ended there, you'd be in Hansler land and you'd have some kind of a claim. But the record doesn't end there. Then comes February 28th, where they say, you know what? We're giving you another chance. You still haven't given to us all the information. Give it the right information. We'll let you have, we'll approve it for this whole time period starting in October. Now, that seems to be the universe that we're operating in. And maybe we're just plowing the same ground again and again now here. But when you say the district court didn't look at this in the light most favorable to your client, there was a chart. The court clearly laid out those things. Where did the court misstep and not understand how to look at this in the light most favorable to your client? Unless what your position is it's just not fair. It's not right. They were giving her the runaround.
The court did not look at the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, in that it essentially stops its analysis once she gets that letter. The court ignored all of the subsequent communications until Ms. Watson is finally terminated,
But what legal effect, I think the problem is, what legal effect did the subsequent notifications have given the 7-day clock that started ticking on February 28th?
Well, I think for one thing, it triggers this interactive process that under the ADA that Drexel failed to engage.
But the problem there is the FMLA, as Judge Jordan said earlier, that defines the process. And Congress gave a process when the ADA claim is based upon an FMLA, and I'll call it a disability, a FMLA pathology. And so what more should they have done? Other than tell her, look, you got to get us this form.
They should not have
or the FMLA.
They should not have misled her as to what her employment status was. And
how did they mislead her? Because that was her employment. Well, you're talking about on hold versus termination.
Correct. Okay. And I think that was ignored by the district court, and it should not have been ignored because
how does that affect an FMLA claim? If at the point where they say you've got this opportunity to cure and she doesn't cure it, I mean, how does that have impact on an FMLA claim and not maybe some other kind of claim you could have brought but didn't bring?
Well, I brought the ADA claim with regards to the failure to engage in the interactive process, okay? And essentially, there are cases in the Third Circuit that say the FMLA gives you X number of days, 12 weeks of leave. However, the ADA can provide additional accommodations above and beyond what the FMLA requires. So that breakdown in the interactive process, which Ms. Watson testified, I'm trying to call Guardian, I'm trying to call my union representation, I'm trying to call Drexel through Mr. Carlton, and no one's getting back to me. That is a breakdown in the interactive process.
You're not, Mr. Baird, ascribing any fault or wrongdoing on the part of the doctors in this case, but from my reading of the record, I thought that the doctors had made errors that had serious consequences. How do we hold Drexel responsible if we determine that the doctor's lack of, let's say, information was the main cause of the problem.
Because I think that Your Honor addresses two separate issues. I think that the one issue is, and what we are focused on with regards to what appellant is focused on, is whether Drexel fulfilled their obligations under the ADA to engage her in an interactive process. Ms. Watson's physicians properly filled out the certifications.
Well, that's what she claims. It's part of the problem is that the physicians were not providing Drexel with the appropriate information concerning her status, her medical status.
I understand that. However, Guardian themselves in the email that I repeatedly point to here says that the medical that she submitted, the medical on file, this is as of May of 2017, fully supports her approval for that time period. So we would quibble with the idea that the certifications were so insufficient that Drexel could not have found her to be approved under the FMLA or the ADA, because the district court wanted to focus on that one letter saying the certification is insufficient, you're out of luck. But I think to do that is to completely pull that and separate that out from the facts of this case and all the facts surrounding exactly what happened to Ms. Watson. And I think that when you look at the reasonable opportunity to cure deficiencies, I think the court should overturn the entry of summary judgment.
Okay, any other questions at all? Judge Fuentes, Judge Jordan? Okay, you used quite a bit of time, so we'll hear again from you, Mr. Baird. Help me with your name. Is it Jadis? Jadis, okay, thank you. Before she starts, I just sent you, Julio and Kent, a message in your chat box. We can't lean over and whisper in this format, so it's a bit of a problem. But just take a look at the note I just sent you. Okay, Ms. Jadis, I'm sorry. I see how I pronounced your name, but I mispronounced it.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Charlene Jadis on behalf of Apelli Drexel University. First, I'd like to address sort of the timeline that we've been discussing with respect to the letter sent to Ms. Watson. While we have focused on the February 28th letter that did in fact highlight everything that was wrong with the certification that Ms. Watson's doctor provided, there were several letters that predated that. There was a November 9th letter that Ms. Watson testified that she received.
Well, help me understand, what is concerning me here now is the FMLA thing, as you may have summarized from our questions of Mr. Baird, that does seem like a hurdle under February 28. But there's an ADA claim there too. Given the history here, I mean, this is a woman who every time she gets a notice from Guardian, she goes to the doctor, not only goes to the doctor, asks the doctor to fix this, then she is in the office and sees the doctor actually, in her own mind, fixing it. She's put on hold, and so far as she knows, she's on hold, but then somehow that hold turns into a termination. She's called to a meeting with her supervisor, I guess Carlton. The union rep is not there. She has to, on her own, say, wait a minute, I'm not meeting with you without my union rep. Then the union rep is settled. Why isn't all that, at least as to the ADA claim, enough to get past summary judgment? It looks to me like she made out a claim that they're certainly not going through any kind of interactive process. Her only interactive process is no. I mean, there's no discussion at all. It's no, and then you're on hold, but hold doesn't mean hold. You're fired. She's then scheduled for this surgery, which obviously is a pretty important thing to her given her history. And then she's told on the eve of surgery, got to cancel your surgery because you don't have any insurance. That to me does not sound like a summary judgment ADA case, maybe not an FMLA case. Maybe Mr. Barrett's right about that.
Well, I would disagree, Your Honor. And the reason why I disagree is because the interactive process took place in May of 2016, when Ms. Watson had a conversation with Darryl Carlton and explained that she had medical issues that necessitated some time off. Ms. Watson testified that during that conversation, Mr. Carlton said, "Hey, Lachelle, there's this process called FMLA. Go to HR, advise them of your issue, fill out the necessary documentation, and you will be granted FMLA leave." She did that and she was granted FMLA leave.
Are you saying, Ms. Jettius, that, and I apologize, did I just say your name right? Is it Jettius or Jettius?
Well, it's Jettius, but you know.
Jettius, I apologize.
I'm going to call you counsel. I can get that one right.
That's okay. Jettius is a beautiful name. So is the assertion that interactive process engagement, it was resolved by one conversation with her supervisor the year before? Because that's it. After that, it's just her and Guardian duking it out. And there doesn't seem to be any further attempt to work with her to say, look, I know we're writing letters and stuff back and forth to each other, but here's the issue, Lachelle. We've got a real problem. And you're coming up on surgery, major surgery. We know that. Just get your doctor to check the box and send it back and it's all good. I mean, there's no attempt other than this, we'll send you a letter, don't send you a letter. There's no engagement besides that after the conversation with her supervisor back in May of the previous year, right?
There is no conversation between Lachelle Watson and Drexel, because according to her testimony, after she received the denial letter, based on her own testimony, she said she did not have a conversation with anyone at Drexel. She simply waited for the process to go through with Guardian. Watson did not thereafter contact Drexel University and say, "Hey, I'm getting these denial letters." She did not thereafter contact Mr. Carlton and say, "Hey, I'm getting these denial letters." She testified that she received these denial letters, that she understood the difference between being eligible and approved. She continued to use the leave, but did not speak to us. She in fact testified, "I otherwise hid my illness pretty well. I didn't discuss my illness with Drexel."
She did indeed say, "I wasn't going around." You know, usually we think it commendable that somebody doesn't put on sackcloth and ashes and go around, you know, saying, "I'm woe is me." She did her best to put on a brave face and get her work done. It appears that's what she's saying. And if you're looking at the record in the light most favorable to her, that's what she's doing. And she is engaging with Drexel to the extent she can through Drexel's chosen third party administrator. She's not going back to Drexel proper, but Guardian is the agent of Drexel and she's talking and communicating with them.
Drexel told her, go to Guardian.
Yeah,
exactly. Drexel advised her to go to Guardian so that she could get the leave. And Guardian was well presented to give her any leave she requested had she provided the documentation. And while I know that we focus on the February 28th letter, there was in fact a 1027 letter. Ms. Watson disputes that she received it, but it was very similar to the 28th letter that sets out the exact deficiencies of her script.
And we've got an obligation to look at this in the light most favorable to her, and she says she didn't get it. So we'll say, okay, she didn't get it. But, you know, Drexel is insisting on just the punctilio of the law, the most exacting compliance with the statute and the regulation. So one would think that they would be a little careful about that themselves. And yet on the January 11th, 2017 letter that they send her, they don't send her the stuff that is required in the statute. They don't send her the certification blank. They don't mention that she's eligible during this period. They don't do those things in the January 11th letter. So how is it that Drexel can fail to do those things and suffer no consequence of it? Is there a prejudice requirement under the FMLA, or should Drexel suffer the consequences of itself failing to provide appropriate notice?
Well, in the January 11th letter, the letter does advise her that she's eligible for leave, but that she needs to provide documentation. And that's at S Appendix 276 to 277.
Which she thought she had done, which her doctors thought she had done.
Wouldn't you agree, Ms. Jadeus, that it does not provide the blank certification form that it was required to, and it did not mention that the certification was required in order to be eligible? didn't do those things, did it?
I would agree.
Okay. And that's what the law requires, and they failed in their obligation under the law. So that's why I'm putting it to you. You're saying she should be held to the exactitude of the law. Drexel did not obey the exactitude of the law. Does the FMLA require a prejudice component, or is it enough to say you didn't obey the law and there are consequences for that, and a consequence is you interfered with their FMLA leave?
We thereafter provided her an opportunity to cure. So we didn't at that point cut her off. She did receive the February 28th letter providing her with all the details.
That's the argument you can make to the jury, but we're on summary judgment.
Well, and also you're saying, what you're saying by that is there's a prejudice requirement in the law. The FMLA requires you to show prejudice from an employer's failure to do what the employer is required to do. And that's why I'm asking you, is there a prejudice requirement under the FMLA? Or is it enough to say you didn't do what you're supposed to do? Because in this case, you're saying to her, you didn't do what you were supposed to do, tough. Is she entitled to say back to Drexel, well, you didn't do what you were supposed to do, tough?
Well, I think what we're doing is we're discounting all the many letters that we sent to her when she had not complied with our requirements to submit the documentation. So we're looking at it in isolation.
They were inadequate. To Judge Jordan's point, to the extent that her CHP form was inadequate, your prior letters to her were inadequate because, as was just said, they didn't do what the law required, and that is tell her what's wrong with her application. There were just letters back and forth, but they didn't give her an opportunity to cure the defect. That came way further in the process. And then there's this very strange course of dealing with her where she's summoned to a meeting without her union rep, and she has to take it upon herself to call the union rep. And from all appears in the record, this is a good employee. Why she's getting the runaround is beyond me, but she's on the record anyhow, a good employee.
For all intents and purposes, she was a good employee. The reason why she was called to that meeting is because at the time that HR recognizes that she has these host of 11 absences that are not indicated they're approved, her employer now wants to investigate the absences. Not only does Daryl call to meet with her, but we reach out to Guardian. There are several emails where we reach out to Guardian and we say, help us understand, did she submit the information? There's even communication where we go so far as to ask Guardian, are the conversations recorded? She's disputing what she said. All of this is in the record.
Guardian told you at some point that you have the option. You could go ahead and approve the request, or you could deny the request. And you took the road less traveled, you denied the request.
You are correct, Your Honor. Guardian said that the medical on file supports the period of time. What it did not support was the usage. In the documentation that we have, and I'll pull up the site for you, Guardian represents to Drexel that based on the last certification, which was submitted 1 year prior to her initial start of use of FMLA, because the doctor had checked off the box on chronic, they could approve her for one absence every 6 months for 2 hours. Between that time period, Ms. Watson had amassed 11 absences spanning from 4 hours to 8 hours. So even if Drexel took the opportunity to reverse the denial, based upon the usage, she had far exceeded what she had used. So even the very last certificate that was provided by her doctor, in attempt to cure the past deficiencies, they did not provide her with the usage that she used.
Is there anything in the record, Ms. Deus, that indicates that Daryl Carlton or anybody else at Drexel went to her and said, and now I'm thinking of this not strictly in FMLA terms, but in the ADA terms, accommodation terms, that anybody went to her and said, look, Shell, we understand you've got an issue, but you got 11 absences now. What's going on? What can we do? We know you have this medical issue. What do you need? You're putting your employment in danger here. Let's talk about this. Is there any indication that happened? Because if there is, I didn't see it. It just looked like the next time they saw her, it was, hey, you're on hold, which really meant, hey, we're about to fire you. Are we missing something in the record here?
You are not missing a conversation between Drexel and Ms. Watson advising her that you have accrued these 11 absences, but there is documentation that when she gets these letters from Guardian, she knows that she's eligible and not approved. During her deposition, she testified that she understood that she was not yet approved. She understood that she had received denial letters, and she understood that she was using absences having received denial letters. So no, there was not a conversation between Drexel and Ms. Watson, but there were letters sent to her by Guardian that she had not received.
Under the ADA, setting the FMLA aside, let's assume for the sake of discussion that you're right. The FMLA, you know, she didn't fit that Procrustean bed. Tough for her. The, you know, she's losing her feet. She's done. But looking at the ADA piece of this, independent of the FMLA, did Drexel, not Guardian, but Drexel, have an obligation to have some kind of iterative communication with her about her medical needs or issues? Or were they entitled to say, you know, Guardian's our people and FMLA is the only accommodation we're talking about? Was there no other accommodation she was entitled to or should have had a discussion with them about that they had a good faith obligation to engage on?
All that Ms. Watson required and testified that she required was leave. Drexel was under the understanding that through Guardian, she would be provided with all the leave that she needed. Drexel did not have minute by minute awareness that these absences that she had been reported were not in fact protected by the FMLA. It was Drexel's understanding that she would receive all the leave that she needed, suffice that she would provide Guardian with the documentation.
If we look at this in the light most favorable to her, is there any implication or inference to be drawn from the fact that Drexel decides to let the hammer drop just before a major expense, just before a major surgery?
There's nothing in the record where Ms. Watson testifies that she communicated directly to Drexel that she was about to have surgery. There was no other conversation. Even in the testimony, she testifies after receiving the November 9th denial letter, she did not thereafter have a conversation with Drexel about her medical condition until the May 2017 meeting. She did not say anything. And she testified that she believes that Mr. Watson would have given her anything she would have asked for. These are her words. She believes that he would have given her anything she would have asked for had she asked.
So she does say something on May 2017?
On May 2017, we call her in to ask her about these absences. It is her position that they had been approved. So at that point, it is not I need more time. It is, you're wrong, Drexel. They're actually approved. So then we begin an investigation as to whether they are approved. And you can see in the record, she begins to forward Mr. Carlton on in and around June 8th, several emails on the same day, trying to forward him documents to show, oh no, you're wrong, Drexel. They were in fact approved. Here are the letters. But none of the letters focused on the time period in question here. The conversation was, oh no, Drexel. It wasn't Drexel, I need more time or I need more accommodation. It was Drexel, you are incorrect. My time was in fact already approved.
It was Drexel, I think I've got this approved already. Why are you doing this to me? Which is not an unnatural position probably for somebody to take who's been trying hard through a union rep. You know, maybe we should ask Mr. Baird this. I don't know what kind of union drops a person like a hot potato when they're in the midst of stuff like this. And she's trying to work with Drexel through Guardian. And she has this conversation. And the next thing she knows, she's out the door. I guess the question I'm asking, and you've maybe done the very best you can do to answer it, is what kind of iterative process is it? If the iterative process is, we tell you, we don't engage with you at all until the very end, and then we say you're fired.
After we told you, you're only on hold.
Well, I think what we're missing is that the iterative process took place in the beginning. We were under the impression that she would receive everything that she needed by going through Guardian. We did not understand that she was at a situation where she's not showing up to work. Mr. Watson is seeing her, she's not showing up to work. For all intents and purposes, he believes that she's using time that is actually approved. He has no knowledge that when she's not showing up to work and reporting these.
Well, that's her position. Isn't that the irony? That's her position.
That's her position.
My supervisor thinks it's approved. I think it's approved. Everybody thinks it's approved.
She receives letters that says it's not approved. She's refused letters that says it's not approved. She receives letters that says not only is it not approved, but here is why it's not approved.
Yeah, that letter didn't go to Carlton.
That letter went to her that said, hey, here are these letters that are saying you're not approved. And here's another letter that tells you why. The letter
said it's not approved because you never signed in the certification. She knows the certification was sent in. She saw the doctor fax it in. So in her own mind, well, what do you mean it wasn't approved? My supervisor's saying I'm approved. These people in the office who don't even know me don't know what the hell they're talking about. Supervisor knows it's approved. My doctor sent it in. My doctor's plural. She had three doctors sending in certification say it's approved. I'm good to go here. And in terms of not showing up for work, it sure looks to me like she couldn't show up for work. This woman was in a pretty serious medical situation. But we do understand your argument, and your time's been up for a bit. Mr. Baird, you reserve 5 minutes, unless I don't want to cut off my colleagues. Any questions?
No, just thank you. Thanks. Mm-hmm. I got the position.
Thank you very much. Mr. Baird.
Thank you. I don't think I need 5 minutes. If the court has any questions, I'm fully ready to address those. But I do think, given the arguments, that the court has a good understanding of the issues. The one thing I would like to just
highlight, what a relief it is to hear an attorney say, basically, I'll rest on my brief. I'm not going to use time, even though I have it. Do you know how incredibly refreshing that is?
Especially
after the first argument.
That's true. That's true, and I hate to spoil it by asking a question, but I've got one. You heard Ms. Judea say they understood the only thing she was asking for was leave. That's the only thing they ever understood, and indeed, when I look at the record, I don't see anything other than that. So why is Drexel wrong to say you can hardly fault us for not engaging in an iterative process when at the jump we tell her, go to HR, talk to them about FMLA, they'll tell you how to get it done, and they let her engage with their agent, and there's clearly an iterative process going on there. There's plenty of back and forth. You may not like it, but there's plenty of back and forth. And at the end of the day, she just doesn't do what she's asked to do and that the statute and regs require. Just paying attention to the ADA piece, not the FMLA piece. What is wrong with that argument from Drexel? That's what we understood was the only accommodation she was looking for. That was the accommodation that there was lots of back and forth on.
I think that the problem with that argument, Your Honor, is that Drexel's saying, we told her right off the bat, you go to Guardian, they'll give you all the leave that you need. And as a matter of fact, Drexel is saying, we were under the impression that all of these absences she were taking were covered by FMLA. Except for the fact that in June, when she has these meetings about those absences, minus any kind of progressive discipline as well, minus any kind of progressive discipline of verbal warning, written warning, suspension, termination, they at that meeting, Lachelle says, no, these are supposed to be protected. I did turn in my certifications. I watched my doctor fax those.
Well, she might have thought she did, but the record reflects that February 28th letter really is a key thing, because that, even if they had messed up before, that gave her the opportunity to fix it, and she just didn't do it. The fact that she didn't understand she didn't do it may be highly regrettable, but how is that? How does that turn into an ADA claim that you didn't engage when there's all this engagement over a period of months?
Because the engagement on the part of Drexel is to, when she says these absences should be protected, at that point, that triggers the interactive process. That is the triggering event. It's not her obtaining FMLA leave.
Okay, so the legal position you're taking is, even if Drexel did everything right under the FMLA, once they told her, once it was the case that they brought her in and said, you didn't get this leave, and they can show she didn't get the leave, that they had some new obligation under the ADA to do more to give her leave.
I believe that, Your Honor. Yes. And okay. Further,
that they, the ADA is sort of like a FMLA plus. Once you've done everything you have to do as an employer under the FMLA leave, you still have an obligation under the ADA to do something additional with respect to leave. That's the argument that you're making, right?
That's correct.
At least under these facts.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. And Patrick.